I'm Doug Wells.
Hi, I'm Roger Goldman. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Certain business figures dominate their eras, becoming larger than life due to the impact that the technologies have on America and the world. Think Thomas Edison or Henry Ford at the beginning of the 20th century. In our time, it is figures like Gates and Jobs and Zuckerberg and Elon Musk.
In one sense, what Musk has done with Tesla is more remarkable than what the other tech giants of our time have accomplished. Musk came into a 100-year-old, highly capital-intensive industry and turned it on its head. The Tesla story is not a smooth one, an inevitable path to its current $692 billion market cap. There were numerous points at which the company could have crashed and burned. The vision and drive of Musk, a man of towering ego and multiple idiosyncrasies, drove the company to its current position.
The story of how Tesla got here is told in detail by Tim Higgins in his new book, Power Play, Tesla, Elon Musk, and the Bet of the Century. We're fortunate to have Tim Higgins with us this morning to chat with us about Tesla's incredible ride. Good morning, Tim, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
I want to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about what motivated you to write this book and how long did it take to get it done?
Well, when I started this book in 2018, I thought I was writing the story of Tesla's very public collapse. You'll recall that that was a period of time when there was a lot of attention on Tesla and Elon Musk, and it appeared every day that the company was getting closer and closer to the end. But the surprising part, as I worked on it, was the story really became one about one of the most remarkable corporate turnarounds of this generation. The company not only got itself out of trouble in 2018, it went on to become the world's most valuable automaker. And that is a dramatic and remarkable tale to tell.
Yeah, and as your book highlights, it's not the only time that Musk had that challenge. And we're going to get that to that in a minute. But I want to start at the beginning. And for most of us, we think of Elon Musk as the founder of Tesla. But the story is more complicated than that. Tell us about the role of Martin Eberhard.
Yeah, it would be nice if the Tesla founding story was black or white, but it's actually quite gray. In early 2000s, you may remember that there was a push to make electric vehicles popular. General Motors had been out with a vehicle called the EV1, but it was a flop. It did attract some enthusiasm, though, in California circles. And among those people who were thinking about electric cars was a gentleman named Martin Eberhard. And he was, he'd been an entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. He'd been one of the early people to get involved in e-books, really kind of ahead of his time. And he was having a midlife crisis. He was going through a divorce. And, you know, what happens when you're in a midlife crisis? You want to buy a sports car. But he was worried about the state of the world and oil consumption and pollution and these sorts of things. And so he really thought it'd be great if he could buy an electric sports car. And there just wasn't such a thing at that time. And it really frustrated him and got him thinking, well, why can't I get something as sexy as a Porsche 911, but as fuel efficient as a Prius? And so that put him on a path to figure out, well, A, why wasn't there more electric vehicles? And B, how could perhaps he bring one to the world? And that led to the kind of the early days of Tesla being founded on the idea of coming out with a two-seat sports car that was all electric, powered by lithium-ion batteries, which was a really groundbreaking idea at the time.
I want to come back to the batteries in a minute, but talk to us a little bit of how Eberhard begins to interact with Musk. How does Musk enter the movie?
Yeah, well, so it was an idea ahead of its time for Martin Eberhard, and he was having a hard time raising money for this idea. In Silicon Valley, along Sand Hill Road, where many of the big venture capitalist investors are officed, it just was not something that was flying, in part because it was obvious that the automotive industry didn't work on the same kind of timeline as the software-making companies of Silicon Valley. A, it was going to take a lot of capital, and B, it was going to take a number of years to pay off. And so he's struggling to find something, but then he comes along Elon Musk. And Elon Musk had made his fortune with PayPal and was becoming somewhat public in the Valley for investing in his latest company, SpaceX, which was aiming to make rockets to go into space and go on to Mars. And it was, you know, a rather out there idea at the time, the idea of private space travel. And it seemed to be the kind of thing, if he was going to bet big on that, maybe he'd be interested in electric cars. Well, it turns out Elon Musk was very interested in electric cars, and he had been trying to find an electric car himself. And the two really hit it off, and Elon became Tesla's largest investor very quickly.
Yeah, no, it's a similar story with both SpaceX, as I recall, and Tesla. You mentioned lithium-ion batteries earlier, and that was revolutionary to think about it in a car. Part of the problem with lithium-ion batteries, all batteries really, is they can be unstable in the wrong environments. Talk to us about the challenges there and the challenges of keeping the batteries from exploding and burning. I know we've all read in the press there's been a few cases of that, but not many.
Yeah, absolutely. So this was one of the big breakthroughs for the company. Before that, one of the hurdles for the auto industry when they talked about electric vehicles was finding the perfect technology, and that was becoming expensive and time-consuming. And one of the kind of the big ideas that Martin Eberhardt and his team had was, why not use lithium-ion batteries? They're very popular with camcorders and laptops, and it was something they thought essentially they could just get off the shelf. These are fat finger-sized cells, and they were just going to basically string thousands of them together to make a big battery pack that would power the car. And in doing so, they thought they would become quickly one of the world's largest buyers of these cells, giving themselves great purchasing power from suppliers so they could bring the price down. So that was the idea. And as they start to work on the company, one of their top people, J.B. Straubel, begins to realize that, well, they might be in trouble here, because essentially one in a million of these cells just naturally has a defect that can cause fires. And so as they realize that this could be an existential problem, the idea that maybe these cars would be like little bombs in rich people's garages didn't seem to sit well. And so the real big innovation early on for Tesla was figuring out how to keep these cells from going into what we call thermal runaway, or which is where they get too hot and they start fires. And so if these cells were all tied together, packed together real closely, then they would all kind of go off. And so they, through some interesting engineering and computer software management, they came up with a battery pack that would keep these cells from igniting and keeping them the proper temperature. And that puts them on the path to having a kind of technology that was pretty revolutionary for the auto industry, and sets them up for, is it a company that's built upon this battery pack technology, or are they going to be a car company?
And that sort of leads them into the first rollout of the Roadster. Talk a little bit about what they had to do to get over the barriers to get the Roadster off the assembly line.
Yeah, well, just like the early business plan kind of underestimated the challenges, the battery, the plan also really kind of underestimated how challenging it would be to make a car. And that's because one of the things about Tesla early on was these weren't car people. They were from tech. They were from batteries. They were just interested in it. And so they made a lot of assumptions that proved to be maybe a little off. And that was, and building the car was one of it. So one of the ideas to save money was they were going to essentially take another car that was already built by a company, Lotus, a sports car that they made, and put a different top on it, have a Tesla appearance, but the underneath parts would be what's already being done. Well, along the way, the team kept improving on the car to make it more comfortable or better performing or whatever, and it just became more and more expensive and more complicated. And by 2008, the company is in trouble. They're behind. Their costs are overrunning, and it's just proving to be a huge, huge challenge to bring out.
Yeah, not only were there technical challenges, there were also huge financial challenges for the company. There were several times, as your book talks about, the company almost went out of business, and Elon Musk had to go to his investors and ask them to put in more money, and he had to bring out his own checkbook. Tell us about the financial risk that Elon had taken. What would have happened if Tesla had gone under? Would Elon still be a fairly wealthy person, or what would his situation have been?
Well, we get into 2008, and the Tesla Roadster is behind. Elon has grown unhappy with Martin Eberhard and has demoted him and eventually pushes him out, and Elon takes the reins as CEO. And it's at this point in time where he is putting his entire fortune on the line for both SpaceX and for Tesla. And if Tesla had collapsed, he would have been in big trouble. He essentially had nothing left at that point. He was borrowing money just to stay afloat himself personally. He was going through a painful divorce. He was on the precipice of collapse, and it was really his ability to marshal investor support that kept them going. And that would be an ongoing theme for the company, that the biggest challenge they often faced was just having enough cash to keep going. And Elon's ability to sell that vision of the future that Tesla could possibly bring has always been critical, because it's been critical to raise the billions and billions of dollars that they would ultimately need to get to the point where they are today.
You know, one of the things that I found interesting in the book was the fact that Musk's drive translated into a tendency to oversell what Tesla would do in the future. On many occasions, he would come out and say, we're going to do X with respect to production volumes or pricings or other things. A couple of questions on that. In your view, was the setting of those incredibly high goals a tactic aimed at the market, an effort to drive Tesla's employees, or both?
I think a little bit of both. It definitely, part of the ability to raise capital for Tesla is the ability to sell this idea that Tesla is a growth story. It even goes back to the early days when you're pulling in investors, you're bringing in more money and you're diluting that kind of ownership. So if the company was originally built on the idea of just being the Roadster, if you're bringing in more money, it needs to be more than the Roadster. It needs to then be the Model S. If you're bringing in investors for the Model S, it's got to be something more. It's got to be a mainstream company. So you see the ambitions and the appetites grow. But part of that is also Elon Musk's vision for what the company wanted to be. He wanted to change the world. And he wanted to do that by first showing automakers that electric cars were possible and kind of egging them on into following that future. The idea with the Model S, which was really kind of a pivotal point for the company, was going to be an electric sedan that was the best car in the world that just happened to be electric, to show the world that it didn't have to be a compromise, that it could actually be something aspirational and desirable. And so he really pulled out all the stops for this vehicle. And from there, it really showed the world that, wow, an electric car could be on par with a Mercedes or a BMW. And maybe there was something there for the mainstream.
Yeah, one of the things that was really interesting is how they would, you know, at the last minute do quality control issues. They would have these, you know, prototype problems that would want to roll out to the world, and then they would have to hand retool things. There's some really extraordinary vignettes in the book about, you know, how they got to where they were and end up with, you know, a high quality vehicle.
Yeah, it's interesting that Tesla, their battery pack technology, their software capabilities are unlike anything else in the auto industry. But they struggle, on the other hand, with the things that the auto industry has been doing for 100 years, and that's building the cars and delivering the cars. And so you see this tension throughout as they get bigger and bigger. And each step, it just adds kind of greater scale and greater risk, because it just becomes so much harder. But you kind of hit on a lot of these vehicles, a lot of these moments in time are very dramatic, because they're doing it for the first time and there's so much on the line.
Yeah, Roger was talking about the public persona of Musk and some of his promises that he has made. Elon is obviously the greatest asset of Tesla. He's also part of a liability for Tesla as well. He's come out with some pretty outrageous things that he has said. He's very controversial. I know the SEC has looked at some of his tweets and haven't really liked what they've seen. Frankly, I think he's navigated all of that pretty well. But you outline one of the situations he got himself in trouble with. This was not a tweet. This was an interview that he had done, where he had told people in 2012, 2013, I guess it was early 2013, that he expected Tesla to turn a profit in 2013, a slight profit. tell us the story about the incredible work it took on Elon's part to make that come true, but also his team, and how did he rally his team?
Yeah, this was an interesting period. One of the times the company nearly collapses as well. 2012, the Model S begins production. Elon is pushing the narrative that sales are going to be very high. But on the other hand, the company is struggling to do that production and running low on cash. As they get to the end of 2012, production kind of kicks in, and they think that sales will then just take off because they've got such a long list of people who have raised their hand to say, hey, we want to buy this. But as they get into 2013, sales are actually not great at all. And as they start to get through that first quarter, there's a realization that while people have shown interest in the car, the company's having a hard time actually closing those sales. They thought essentially that the cars would sell themselves, and they hadn't really put in the kind of resources needed to do the actual sales of it. The car was way more expensive than it had originally been advertised, and people were still not quite sure about electric cars. So there is a kind of a last-minute push to make the quarter happen because they're essentially running out of cash. And what happens is basically everybody in the company is put towards either building the car or selling the car. You've got this all-hands-on-deck approach, and they're really a rush to get these vehicles into people's hands, and they're tracking every vehicle on the roadway as it heads towards a customer, and daily updates on if they're going to make it or not. And ultimately, at the end of the quarter, they, by the skin of their teeth, they do, and it's just enough cars for them to post just a slight profit, which is the first time in a quarter they've done that, and a huge win, showing the investor community that this thing could potentially be everything that Elon had promised.
You mentioned the importance of getting sales completed. One of the things that was revolutionary about Tesla is not just how it makes the vehicles, but how it sells them. And that is the idea that Tesla is going to not have a franchise dealer network. Talk a little bit about that significance in terms of automakers.
Yeah, well, for one thing, automakers build the cars and sell them to dealers. It's a rather kind of process, rather clean for the quarterly results. And that, so in that quarter we just talked about, it was a challenge because Tesla needed to get those cars into people's hands and get the checks and exchange the keys to get counted as a sale. So just a lot more complex. The idea that Tesla had and Elon Musk originally had was that they would be able to control that customer experience better. Who hasn't had a bad time buying a car from someplace? They wanted to change that, kind of like an Apple store. And so they didn't go down the route of having all these franchise dealers around the country. Well, that meant that they needed to own it. And that means cost and complexity of just all of those steps. So on one hand, they could control the experience. On the other hand, they actually owned the experience and had to take care of it. So we see throughout the company struggling to figure out how to sell cars to people and service them as they get bigger and bigger as a company. And so at first, it's learning the basic steps. And then it's dealing with the growing army of people who own the vehicle.
And, of course, dealing with legal challenges against a very strong network of lobbyists for franchise dealers. Anyway.
As an attorney, right? That has to be fascinating to you. One of the things that's fascinating to me with my undergrad in engineering is it's incredibly complex to build a car. I mean, when you think of all the new designs that they had to come up with, granted, the electric vehicle is simpler from a machinery standpoint, but they had to invent a lot of things, not just for the car, but the infrastructure and everything else that takes place in it. Is my memory correct that a lot of what Tesla developed, they released their patents to the industry because Musk's vision was to electrify, was really his vision is to save the planet, right? And to prevent the pollution from gas burning cars. Is my recollection correct that they actually released the patents, and was there much consternation within the board as to whether or not to do that?
Yeah, years ago, Tesla got attention for saying its patents were going to be open. And it plays as part of that a narrative that Musk has created of helping the industry try to get towards electrification. But make no mistake, there's still a knife fight between Tesla and its competitors over who's going to dominate that market space. One area that has been particularly challenging is the way vehicles are charged. And so, you know, most people, the idea is that you would charge your vehicle at home, and that would be the best way to do it. But, you know, what about a road trip? And so early on for electric cars, this has been a concern, range anxiety. One of the ways that Elon tried to address that in 2013 was rolling out supercharger stations. These would be company-controlled places for people to charge the vehicle, and they did it very quickly. And the success of that created a moat for Tesla. It just became an easy experience to charge your Tesla if you were on a road trip. Now, as competitors have rolled out there, this has become a challenge because Tesla wouldn't let a General Motors electric vehicle charge at its station. And if you have one of these electric vehicles from a rival, sometimes it can be a less than great experience. And there's been a push in the past to use those Tesla stations for others, but Elon had stood against it. Only recently, however, as governments around the world are talking about pouring in billions of dollars to grow out charging station infrastructure, Tesla and Elon Musk has said that he's thinking about opening up, or he plans to open up those charging stations to rivals. So, you know, he's used the advantages that he has when he can to create a user experience that has been better for Tesla owners.
The book is Power Play: Tesla, Elon Musk, and the Bet of the Century. We've been talking to Tim Higgins, the author. Tim, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you leave a review no matter how you listen. And we'd appreciate it if you clicked 5 stars.